You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Said the night wind to the little lamb, do you see what I see? Way up in the sky, little lamb, do you see what I see? A star, dancing in the night with a tail as big as a kite, with a tail as big as a kite. Said the little lamb to the shepherd boy, do you hear what I hear? Ringing through the sky, shepherd boy, do you hear what I hear? A song, high above the tree, with a voice as big as the sea, with a voice as big as the sea.
Well, we have a voice big enough here this evening, ladies and gentlemen, to span the sea as TPC continues to scour the earth to bring to you the most inspirational, insightful, and impactful individuals wherever in the world they may reside. Tonight, we're going all the way over to Ireland, to our ancestral homelands, if you're a son of the South here and of that Scots-Irish heritage. Welcome to the show this evening. I'm your host, James Edwards. It is Saturday evening, December the 12th. We are a mere fortnight away from Christmas, where we celebrate the birth of Jesus Christ, and our music selections this week will begin to shift as well to the spiritual hymns and carols of the season, and we have a guest that I cannot wait to introduce to you. He is Reverend James Dawson. He was born to a Scotch-Irish family who was burned out of their home in Ireland in the 1920s. He says it was a poor but happy upbringing with five siblings. His mother and father worked as indentured servants in their youth. Pastor Dawson was first arrested in 1974 when he was a mere lad of 10 years of age. He started a business at 21. He had 40 workers, got married, had lots of kids, became a Calvinist minister after 5 years of study with the Reformed Congregational Mission, and ran a church in the slums of Glasgow. He has recently been involved with the Knights Templar movement, which we'll be telling you more about throughout the course of this hour. Our guest has been shot, blown up, jailed in multiple countries, survived many attempts to get rid of him, but he is now pushing ahead for Christ's crown and covenant and preparing for the war that has already started. I asked him earlier today, I said, do I call you pastor or reverend? He said, you just call me brother. And with that being said, it is my honor, ladies and gentlemen, to welcome to the show for the first time, making his debut appearance, Brother James Dawson. Brother, welcome. How are you?
I'm very well indeed. Now, just to correct you, my name's Dawson, D-O-W, not D-A, because D-A is English, and I'm not English.
Ah, very good, very good. You know, I read it over here as an American, and, you know, we can get confused on that. Fantastic.
No, it's lovely. Well, hey, listen. I'm so proud to be on your show. Very proud.
Well, I want to thank our mutual friend Nick Griffin for facilitating the introduction. I have had, as I told you earlier today, just a delight in reading more about your work and your history. And as a matter of fact, let's just start right there, if we don't mind. Of course, we're going to be talking about the book in just a moment. Let's further the introduction a little bit more, if you don't mind. Tell us a little bit more about yourself and your activism. The BBC, for instance, along with the Scotland Herald and other parliaments across the West, have labeled you as Britain's most influential so-called, we'll use their terminology, far-right activist. You don't get that for nothing. What did you do?
Well, I'm very, very proud of that title, actually. I think it's very flattering. Well, let me just tell you first, I'm sitting in my living room underneath the biggest picture in the house, and it's a framed picture of the Declaration of Independence of your country, which is my kin's country, and I'm immensely proud because I don't think a lot of Americans understand how closely we identify ourselves with our kin in the southern states. If you travel around the slums of Belfast, we have the whole sides of houses. I think I sent you a few pictures, brother. The whole sides of houses painted with the image of the frontiersmen, the men of the Shenandoah Valley, the men of the Alamo, the men of the Dixie States. And, you know, that's who we are. We are very close. And, you know, most people in America think they're Irish. They're not. They're Ulster Scots. And that's something that escapes a lot of people.
No, it's certainly nothing that will escape yours truly or the audience of this program. And I want to just thank you again for starting off this particular conversation by making such a statement. And as a matter of fact, it was on my notes to do so. I was going to read from an email you sent me a few weeks ago. We've actually been planning this. We wanted it to hit very near to Christmas because it's an important message. It's a Christ-centered message, and this is a perfect time to deliver it. So we didn't want to go too soon with the interview. But you wrote to me a couple of weeks ago, here in Ulster, you are in Northern Ireland tonight. We are one with our southern brethren. And as a child on my mother's knee, you wrote, I heard the mighty tales of the King's Mountain or Over the Mountain Men in the War for Liberation and the stories of Crockett and Bowie at the Alamo. We Ulster Scots or Scotch-Irish are first cousins, and we are fiercely proud of our kin across the pond. And as any man will tell you, they will tell you that around here in these parts. Talking about there in Ulster. Now, again, that is something that I think we take for granted. But as you mentioned, so many people have been disconnected from that glorious heritage that stretches from the American South all the way back to those windswept isles of Northern Europe from whence we came.
Well, of course, and, you know, you asked me about activism. You know, we watched with horror what happened in the southern states in the 60s with the so-called civil rights movement. And in 1966, the civil rights movement started in Northern Ireland, where we had a three-quarters Protestant majority of Scots descent. But the Scots are an Irish tribe originally, so it's not as if we're incomers. This is our ancient, historical land. Ulster, the north of Ireland, is Ulster, and that is our ancient land. I mean, the Gaels, who are now the Irish Catholics, they came here about 2,500 years ago. And despite the fact that they recognise that there's standing stones and stone forts that were built 5,000 years ago, they still think we're interlopers. No, we just came back to our homeland. But what used to bother us ever so much in this country was in 1966, the Irish allegedly Catholics rose up. But it wasn't the Catholics. It was hardcore communist, Zionist, Jewish lawyers, the exact same pattern that happened to us. They rose up and called us, you know, Christian fundamentalists, narrow-minded bigots, you know, Neanderthals, lost in the Dark Ages, the exact same as what happened in Mississippi in the southern states. And then, because we stood up to them, they started a murder campaign that lasted 25 years, and it killed thousands of my kin. And this is a tiny country. There's 1 million Protestants here. We lost 3,000 or 4,000 people, and it was neighbor against neighbor. The British stood back and allowed it to happen. They could have crushed it in a week, and no problem. So we had to fight these people. And they were Marxists pretending to be Catholics and sticking up the old sectarianism to further their aims. Now they've come out and admit, full-blown, that they are Marxists.
So many things.
They are pro-gay.
Hold on right there, brother. So many things in common. I see my co-host Keith Alexander nodding in agreement, drawing the parallels between the 1960s here and what you're describing. We will continue right
after
this.
Okay, girls, about finished with your lesson on money?
Daddy, what is a buy-sell spread for gold coins?
Well, when you sell a gold coin to a coin shop that's worth, say, $1,200, you don't actually get $1,200. But don't worry, we're members of UPMA now, so we don't have to worry about that.
Daddy, what if somebody steals our gold?
We don't have any gold at the house. It's stored safely in the UPMA vault, securely and insured.
But the S&P 500 outperformed gold. Daddy, gold is a bad investment.
Some people do think of it that way, but actually, gold is money. And as members of the United Precious Metals Association, we can use our gold at any store, just like a credit card. Or I can ask them to drop it right into Mommy and Daddy's bank account, because we're a UPMA member family. Find out more at upma.org. That's upma.org.
Why don't we say to the government writ large that they have to spend a little bit less? Anybody ever had less money this year than you had last? Anybody better have a 1% pay cut? You deal with it. That's what government needs, a 1% pay cut. If you take a 1% pay cut across the board, you have more than enough money to actually pay for the disaster relief. But nobody's going to do that because they're fiscally irresponsible. Who are they? Republicans. Who are they? Democrats. Who are they? Virtually the whole body is careless and reckless with your money. So the money will not be offset by cuts anywhere. The money will be added to the debt, and there will be a day of reckoning. What's the day of reckoning? The day of reckoning may well be the collapse of the stock market. The day of reckoning may be the collapse of the dollar. When it comes, I can't tell you exactly, but I can tell you it has happened repeatedly in history when countries ruin their currency.
You know where the solution can be found, Mr. President? In churches, in wedding chapels, in maternity wards across the country and around the world. More babies will mean forward-looking adults, the sort we need to tackle long-term, large-scale problems. American babies in particular are likely going to be wealthier, better educated, and more conservation-minded than children raised in still industrializing countries. As economist Tyler Cowen recently wrote, quote, "By having more children, you're making your nation more populous, thus boosting its capacity to solve climate change. The planet does not need for us to think globally and act locally so much as it needs us to think family and act personally. The solution to so many of our problems, at all times and in all places, is to fall in love, get married, and have some kids."
Said the shepherd boy to the mighty king, "Do you know what I know? In your palace, warm, mighty king. Child shivers in the cold. Let us bring him silver and gold. Let us bring him silver and gold."
Such a beautiful time of year, such a spiritual time of year for men of the West, men of Christ. And Brother Jim, let me tell you, ladies and gentlemen, we have got one here that we hope we will be collaborating with for many years to come. And it is our pleasure to introduce him to you, our wider listening audience this evening, from Ireland. And again, it's really hard for the purpose of a backgrounder to really go into his full history. He's been involved with so many different organizations, as a leader in so many different organizations, and he has left his fingerprints all throughout Europe, as we said, multiple parliaments. Touche, but multiple parliaments and media outlets refer to him as the most influential far-right so-called activist. But Jim, before we continue on, and I want to get to the book, but you were making some great points about how our brethren, where you are, and our extended family here in the American South and vice versa, we have faced some of the same enemies. We have fought and won and lost some of the same battles. That battle continues today. We'll get into how this book, your book, plays into the solutions that we need. But continue on with where we left off before the break.
Yeah, well, I think the good thing is, I mean, I was quite a successful young businessman in Scotland. And I had been involved since I was 10 in supporting the families of the... Because these are normal working-class guys who were going to prison for fighting Marxists when their government should have been doing it. So it was left to us to kill them. And, you know, that shouldn't be the case. So families were left bereft of their men. And it was a shame because Roman Catholics were being wound up to hate Protestants. Protestants were being wound up to hate Catholics. It was an ugly, horrible situation. And this went on for almost 30 years, and this was an internecine war, street upon street, field against field, and it was a very intense war and not very nice. But I moved over. I went back to my homeland after the bombing of a war memorial. Now, you know, imagine on Remembrance Day in America when all the country comes together to remember the fallen, and you have the parade, the memory parade, and the relatives go to the war memorial to lay flowers. The IRA actually detonated a bomb in a Catholic building And that was the only year that Catholic building hadn't been searched to belong to the church because they said it was, you know, an infringement on their rights. So the army said, okay, we won't search it. There was a bomb in it that year, and it killed almost 20 people, innocent civilians. There was no military people killed, just innocent men, women, and children, paying their respects to their grandfathers, their fathers who died in the wars. And that incensed me so much that I just packed in my business, got on a boat with my whole family, and came to Ireland to actually take up arms in the fight against these mad, crazy Marxists who were pretending to be Roman Catholics. And I did that, and I ended up in jail. But it was a great experience, and I never killed anybody, innocent people or normal, you know, Roman Catholics or anything like that, because I don't like that type of thing. But it's a great experience for what's happening now. And what I learned from that experience is the left wing are highly sophisticated, highly organized. I've been and seen their training camps that George Soros runs for the media outlets in the West, America, England, Germany. And every summer, August, he takes about 3,000 top journalists out to a training camp in Romania, and he wines and dines them and throws money at them. So they're all unified in their attack on us, just the same as they attack the southern good old boys, the rednecks. And by the way, I don't know if you know where that name comes from, redneck. People think it's because they worked in the fields. It doesn't mean that. The actual meaning of redneck is they're men of the covenant. They're Scots, Protestant, Calvinists who stood against the English oppressors, and they wore a red handkerchief around their neck. Covenanters. Anybody wants to know this, go and search up in the Google Covenanters, the Covenanting struggle in Scotland. They wore red handkerchiefs around their neck to say they were blood-bought men of Christ, and there was no king but Christ. And we fought with the English, and they were also Protestants, but we fought with them because we said we will neither have a pope nor a king as the head of our church. Christ Jesus only is the head of our church. And in 4 years, we lost 18,000 men on the fields and the moors because nobody was allowed to give us succor or take us in or feed us. And all the ministers were put out of their churches, and we lost 18,000 men. Just go and Google that, the Covenanters. That is the spirit that flows through the veins of the southern men. That is the spirit of Dixie.
Well, I knew that. This is Keith Alexander, by the way.
Oh, a great name. One of your forebears was a great Covenanter, may I add, Mr. Alexander.
Uh-huh. Well, one of my direct ancestors was the daughter of the Earl of Stirling, the poet Earl or something, I understand. He came over to America in 1659. But let me tell you, in the Civil War, I had my direct ancestor was one of 12 children with a very colorful name, Independence Ellen Schuyler Alexander. And I think they're running out of names by the end. He had a brother named President Washington Alexander. but let me just ask you this, back on the subject of Protestant Catholic combat and problems in Northern Ireland. To what extent were the Jews involved in that? They were very fundamentally involved in every left-wing movement in America since 1890. And they're these, I would call them the yeast that makes the dough rise in every left-wing movement. For example, in the civil rights movement in America, if it had not been for Jewish media control and intelligence and organizational skill and money, the whole thing wouldn't have amounted to a hill of beans. And that's the way it's been with the feminist movement, homosexual rights.
No, same
movement,
here, brother.
On and on.
The same here. We don't really have Jews in Ireland. We don't have any to speak of as such. But the BBC, the British media, were completely against us, the British Protestants, and they were totally pro-Marxist Catholics. But not because of a Catholics, but because of a Marxist. So the propaganda that was feeding this whole killing machine was coming from the elites in England, who were mainly Jewish, and I've got to say, Brooklyn, New York, and also, I've got to say, the Kennedys and people like that. They were the ones stirring this whole pot. But the religious fervor now died down. We're still the same. Ulster Protestants, we don't change. But a lot of the Catholics now are now seeing us as perhaps people they can work with to save the whole island of Ireland, both Catholicism and Protestantism. Because we are now so outnumbered by these crazy green-haired lefties, weirdos, oddballs, freaks. But the dichotomy is this. The Catholics fly the Palestinian flag. So the working-class Protestants fly the Israeli flag. Not because they're Zionists. It's just because if the Catholics are for this, we must be against it. But most Protestants in this country wouldn't have a clue. They tend to give tacit support to Israel only because the Marxists support Palestine. They don't know about it. If you go into any kind of deep history about it, they quickly reject the whole Israel thing. But that's so we're in a sticky situation, brother.
Well, it's that way, and we've talked with our friends in South Africa. They tell us the same thing, that basically the Jews were behind. They were the yeast that made the dough rise in the anti-apartheid movement, just like they were in the civil rights movement, and just apparently as they were in the what they call the Irish Troubles. And what they said, their tactic seems to be, at least to me, is that they're like some kid that you knew in junior high school or whatnot, that some scrawny kid that liked to get the two biggest guys fighting one another.
Yep.
And they would do that. They would try to get things stirred up, and then they'd sit back with a bag of popcorn and watch the fun, okay? And that's what
exactly
they've done in all of these nations. Plus, now they have the nation of Israel. I was interviewing Alana Mercer, who is a Jewish South African, former South African woman, whose father was big in the anti-apartheid movement. And I'll tell you all of that story
well,
and even more after these words from our sponsor.
He may tell you more about it the next time you come. We've got to get to the book.
Yeah.
But we will get to the book. We will get to the book next. This interview is flying by far too quickly. If it wasn't for that unpleasantness in the Supreme Court, I would ask Brother Jim if he could stay on with us the entire program tonight. But folks, if you're enjoying this as much as I am, believe me, this is the first of many to come with this individual. Stay tuned.
Your daily Liberty Newswire. You're listening to Liberty News Radio. USA Radio News with Dan Naraki.
The Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices at the Centers for Disease Control has added its approval to the emergency use authorization for Pfizer's coronavirus vaccine. The CDC committee voted Saturday to recommend the vaccine for use for people 16 years or older. With the FDA's approval Friday night, vaccines have already begun to be shipped across the country. However, some may be wary of the shot based on how quickly approval has come. Dr. Stephen Hahn, FDA commissioner, says the agency was able to quickly evaluate all the data surrounding the vaccine's safety.
We applied our high standards of review in reviewing this product so that Americans can have trust and confidence that the vaccine meets FDA's rigorous standards for safety and effectiveness. And with this authorization, we know that our federal partners are already moving to distribute the first doses of the vaccine throughout the country.
This is USA Radio News.
Rockstar Radio. Did you know this station, this network is looking for their next rockstar broadcaster? That's right, we are. And it could be you. It could be you interviewing the guests, talking to the newsmakers right in the middle of everything. Have you ever dreamed of being a rockstar show host? Now could be your chance. Together with this station, we'll help you with everything you need. The studios, the equipment, your own producer, a co-host if you'd like, and so much more. Broadcasting is changing. There's never been a need for fresh voices and unique opinions like there is right now. You can do this. Our professional team will guide you every step of the way. Sound effects, show content, building your social network media, and everything you need to be the next rockstar broadcaster. Get all the details. Email Bill at rockstar.today. That's Bill at rockstar.today. To get started with your own show, email Bill at rockstar.today. That's Bill at rockstar.today. Don't wait. You could be the next voice for America. Email Bill at rockstar.today.
President-elect Joe Biden has made his pick to run the Department of Veterans Affairs. Jeremy Scott has more from the USA Radio News Oregon Bureau.
Biden has appointed Dennis McDonough as the Secretary of Veterans Affairs.
He shares my belief that we have many obligations as a nation. We have only one truly sacred obligation, to prepare and equip our troops that we send into harm's way, and then to care for them and their families when they return.
McDonough was President Obama's chief of staff from 2013 to 2017. President-elect Biden said he played a key role in improving health care for veterans during the administration. From the Oregon USA Radio News Bureau, I'm Jeremy Scott.
And President Trump has added a federal holiday to the calendar this year. The executive order, signed Friday, makes Christmas Eve, Thursday, December 24th, a federal holiday, giving federal workers a fully paid day off. Traditionally, past presidents have offered federal workers a half day in the past. This is USA Radio News.
welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
Send a king to the people everywhere. Listen to what I say. Pray for peace, people everywhere. Listen to what I say. The child, sleeping in the night, he will bring us goodness and light. He will bring us goodness and light. He will bring us goodness and light.
Well, goodness and light, that is the message that we hear on this radio program have been trying to share with our audience for the past 16 years. It is much easier to do so when you have men like our guest tonight who have set an example with their life for the rest of us to follow, that's for sure. We could sit and trade stories and look back on fond remembrances and even a shared history for hours on end, but I want to be sure in his debut appearance tonight to get to the book. The book. And I'm reading now from a letter that was sent to me about this book. It is not a novel. It is, in fact, a guidebook, and as such should be constantly referred to as often as possible for wisdom, instruction, and comfort. This book can provide a wealth of practical knowledge for the survival of you, your loved ones, our nation, and our faith in an easy-to-grasp format. This is where this letter gets very important, ladies and gentlemen. Stay with me here. The main purpose of the book we're about to tell you about is to help build the man, and through the man, with faith, we can not only fight whatever comes against us, but also dare to hope for victory in temporal terms. Be aware of the superb quality of the paper, the binding, the embossing, the fine silk stitching. This book was made to last and to guide our warriors in the years to come. Brother Jim, tell us the name of the book, why you wrote it, and why we're talking about it tonight.
Okay, well, the name of the book is Deus Vault, Reconquista of the West, a handbook for resisting the Great Replacement. Now, I didn't write the whole book. The book is a collaborative effort from many Templar knights. And by the way, we have nothing to do with the Masonic Templars. Let me just make that very clear. We have nothing to do with the Masons. We are a real military order. We operate across Europe. We have bricks and mortars headquarters, and we deal a lot in the old Eastern countries, Serbia, Kosovo, Hungary, Poland. And these people have lived under real oppression, so they know what's coming, and I know what's coming to you guys. I lived through a civil war here, and I've got to say this book, because we don't make any money on it. You've seen the book. You've seen the quality of it. It weighs a kilo. It weighs 2.5 pounds. It is the the Templars only provide the finest quality merchandise, swords, books, anything we do, it must be of supreme quality. We don't.
I'm holding it in my hand right now. If you don't mind me saying, I'm holding it in my hand as we speak.
A weighty tome.
It is, and it's a serious thing. It's not for money. We don't do this for money. We do this because we know it's coming to America, and with no disrespect, and please understand, gentlemen and brothers and sisters who are listening to this, I don't mean any disrespect. But you guys have had a fairly easy gig over the last 200 years. You have no idea what's coming. You have no idea what's coming.
We in the South are the only people that have know
exactly,
what's coming.
Exactly. And bodies will be in the
field. Quite frankly, you know, we're the first people that total war was visited upon in the modern age.
Exactly. I remember the march through Georgia and all that. Well, it's going to happen again. And you're going to be picking up your sons in the fields, and there'll be corpses, and they'll be rotten. That's what's coming. They will not stop until they've destroyed our people, and I mean our people as in us, the good Christian people of the West. They're going to come for us. They're coming for us now. It's started. So this book has no other purpose in life. Forget money, forget anything. This book has only one purpose. It is a revolutionary handbook for men. First of all, we have to build the men. We have to build it, because I have seen so many stupid irresponsible and silly right-wing people. It bothers me. It bothers me no end. You know, I look at this guy you've got in America, Spencer, or whatever his name is, you know, screaming like a little boy because he doesn't get his own way in Charlottesville. All this kind of nonsense. We need men who are not just strong in the arm, but they're strong in their soul, they're strong in their heads, they have an unbreakable will. With these men, we can win the war. And we have only a very limited time to turn our sons and our young men into fighters that the world has never seen before. Men who do not understand the word defeat. They don't understand how to bend. They're unreasonable. They're uncompromising. And they fight with the Spirit of God and His Son, Christ Jesus. And they fight under Christ's blood-red banner, the banner of the Holy Martyrs. And they fight to the death. That's what we need. Not rhetoric. We need it for real, brother.
Well, whenever you come to America, you need to be sure to make a detour to Memphis and see us here. He needs to come see my house, does he not, of James, with all the flags?
Oh, that's right. Yes, I mean, Keith's home is certainly a testament to our, as I said a moment ago, our shared history. And we can certainly, yes, and there is a time and there is a purpose and there is a need for that in real life fellowship. But I fear that our good friend, Brother Jim, is right about what may be to come, and that's why we need to steel ourselves intellectually, spiritually, physically. And this book, I said it in a letter that I sent out to our audience, Jim, and my goodness, how fast this hour is going by, but a letter I sent out to my audience just a few days ago. This may be, in 16 years, we run these quarterly fundraising drives four times a year, obviously, hence quarterly. And I said in a letter that I sent out quite sincerely that this may be the most important offering that we've ever put forth as an incentive gift to those who give to this program. And this book that we're talking about right now is that gift for our Christmas endeavor here this winter. And there is so much in this book. It's a book unlike any I've ever had. Nearly 400 pages, but it's not the length. It's not a wasted page, not a word wasted, and it covers so much ground from political correctness to the demographic winter that the men of the West have entered into, chivalry in the 21st century. Obviously, it talks heavily about faith, Christianity. I'm reading now from the book, Christianity is the very core of our national identity, but our pre-Christian heritage matters too, and we talk about the fact that, you know, there are people who have contributed to this book whose family have lived within a 50-mile radius of their current home for the last 5,000 years. It talks about how to be a man, how to be self-sufficient, how to behave when if you are arrested. There's just Jim, help me. I mean, there's so much in this book that we need to focus on with just such little time remaining.
Yeah, well, I live in a street here. I live in a country road, and there's five stone circles in this road. My family have not moved from this spot for 5,000 years. Haven't moved. Never more than 50 miles away. And it's very common in Europe. But this book is written by fighters. That's the difference. It's not written by pencil-necked web warriors and all the rest of it. It's written by men who have been kicked about the streets, who have been stabbed, who have been acid thrown at them, who have been shot, who have been blown up. That's happened to me. It's happened to many of the writers in this book. This is, and one of the guys in this book is a Hungarian man whose father was on the Nazi side. And when the Russians took over, they threw him and his pregnant, well, they threw his pregnant mother and made them live in a chicken shed for 5 years. He was born in a chicken shed by these wretched pinko communists. So we're dealing with men who understand more than anybody alive can understand the pain. And the strength, because everybody says they're going to fight, they're going to fight, they're going to fight, until they kill your children, or until they kill your wife, they take away your family, they take away your job, they take away everything. We need to be very careful. We need to build ourselves up spiritually in Christ Jesus, because there's a war coming. But we can only fight as decent Christian men. Now, that means we fight like tigers, like fierce tigers, with no mercy. Because the heathen deserves no mercy. Other Christians, yes, they may be misguided, but the heathens and these other people, no mercy, no quarter. Ask for none and give none. They will either kill us or we will kill them. That's the way the future war is going to be. Now, I wish it wasn't so, and if I could do something to prevent a future war, I would, but it's inevitable. And the quicker we realize this, the better for everybody involved. And, you know, I don't know what to tell people because, you know, we've been dealing with people all over the world. We've got a lot of friends in America, the American Freedom Party. We've had conferences in Houston, Texas. We've been all over America. Pittsburgh was our last conference. And, you know, we know a lot of good Americans. The Americans are the salt of the earth, my favorite people on God's planet. Not just of Ulster Scots descent, period. They're brilliant people. You are brilliant people. And anything we can do to help you get through this struggle that's coming, we must. Because if America falls, we all fall. Simple as that.
What an inspirational message. We have one more segment with our featured guest of the evening. And what a guest he has been. We'll be right back with Brother Jim next.
Have we realized the assault against our lives, our liberties, our faith? To defeat this assault, Christians and all people of goodwill should have strategies to prevail in our faith and principles, which are simple. No need for a complex formula. One goal, one aim. A strategy like the heroic Christians of the past. We win, they lose. Nothing less. Big Q, Little Q. The Calm Before the Storm by a friend of Medjugorje. The strategy of heaven revealed. Big Q, Little Q. The Calm Before the Storm. Available on Amazon.com or by calling Caritas in the U.S. at 205-672-2000.
The Foundation for Moral Law is a nonprofit legal foundation committed to protecting our unalienable right to publicly acknowledge God. The Foundation for Moral Law exists to restore the knowledge of God in law and government and to acknowledge and defend the truth that man is endowed with rights not by our fellow man, but by God. The foundation maintains a twofold focus. First, litigation within state and federal courts. Second, education. Conducting seminars to teach the necessity and importance of acknowledging God in law and government. How can you help? Please make a tax-deductible contribution, allowing foundation attorneys to continue the fight. You may also purchase various foundation products as well at morallaw.org. Located in Montgomery, Alabama, the Foundation for Moral Law is a nonprofit, tax-exempt 501c3, founded by Judge Roy Moore. Please partner with us to achieve this important mission. morallaw.org.
Hi, I'm Patty, wife of former Congressman Steve Stockman. In Congress, Steve sought impeachment of Eric Holder for his corruption of the Justice Department and his fast and furious gun running that caused Border Agent Brian Talley's death. Steve called for arrest of Lois Lerner for her contempt of Congress as it investigated her targeting of conservative nonprofit groups. After 4 years, four grand juries, and millions of tax dollars, Steve Stockman is in prison. His case involved four checks to nonprofits. DOJ has one standard for Hillary Clinton, but another for folks like President Trump and my husband. We've spent all our savings, all Steve's retirement, and much of mine. Steve Stockman has fought for you and America. Won't you join me now to fight for Steve? To help, text FIGHT to 444-999. Text FIGHT to 444-999 or go to defendapatriot.com. DefendAPatriot.com.
God rest ye merry gentlemen, let nothing you dismay. Remember Christ our Savior was born on Christmas Day to save us all from Satan's power when we were gone astray. Oh, tidings of comfort and joy, comfort and joy. Oh, tidings of comfort and joy. From God our Heavenly Father, blessed angel came, and unto certain shepherds brought tidings of the same, how that in Bethlehem was born the Son of God by name. Oh, tidings of comfort and joy, comfort and joy. Oh, tidings of comfort and joy.
I love Christmas. I love the promise of Christmas. I love everything about Christmas, and I love...
Except the bills of Christmas.
Well, I love our Christian brethren, too, and I love brother, Jim Dowson. If I'm pronouncing that correctly, now over here, I guess
we
call
know.
Ourselves
you've got to know. Yes.
Dowson. Yes, brother Jim Dowson, who is a contributor to this book, Deus Vult, Reconquista of the West, the Handbook for Resisting the Great Replacement. That's what, look.
Let me ask you a question, James, because this has been bothering me. Do the people there in Ulster, have they come to realize that this is not a Catholic-Protestant matter? It's not a conservative-liberal matter. It's a white people's matter, and white genocide
Us. Yeah, some people. Most of the Protestants have understood that, and now increasing numbers of Roman Catholics, thank God, they are now beginning to saddle up with us, and they see us actually as their friends now, not their enemies. Yeah, of course they do. But the Soros people are putting so much money into the south of Ireland, the Catholic end of Ireland. They've brought in the last 12 months, gay marriage, abortion, all of this crazy stuff. And they are now the
are
number
they bringing in racial
people.
Strangers too, Jim?
Oh, are you kidding me on? Yeah, 30%.
Well, I need
child.
To know how much.
30%.
We're ground zero.
Child. Yeah, well, listen, 30% of every school children in Ireland is foreign. 30% is foreign. Ireland will be an immigrant-led country in under 30 years, period.
Mm. Yeah, that is so tragic and so treasonous. Here's the thing, though. Jim, here's the thing. We have got the only thing equipped to fight back is a strong church. Now, that's my opinion. I'm sure you share it, but I want to ask you a two-part question. If you can keep these two answers in your mind, or these two questions in your mind as you begin to answer. The first one would be, can you comment on the weakness of the church? I was born and raised in the church. I have seen the churches here in America capitulate to any innovation that the world would give it. There is nothing they couldn't do to accommodate it quickly enough. But at the same time, I also believe that no nationalist movement without Christ at its center will be able to lead us to victory. So if you could comment on how the church has become so weak.
What can we do when the church is turned over to the other side? They're basically the true religion of most American denominations is not Christianity, it's liberalism or cultural Marxism.
Well, as my pastor always said, yeah, that's good, Keith. Yep. As my pastor always said, not every building with a steeple is a church house. But how do we address the weakness and the capitulation of the church while also strengthening?
Drawing upon its strength.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, very easy. I think you have to start from the very basic thing, and you may think this is a bit of a strange answer, but if you look at Paul when he was teaching the churches, simple things. Like men, like people dressing appropriately when they go to church. Now, hear me out, because you might think this is rather petty and silly. Dressing appropriately for men and women, i.e. women understanding the position in natural law. So women should have hats on, men hats off. A simple thing like that, but Paul labours on it over and over and over again, especially Corinthians and these kind of wealthy churches where people are getting a bit wealthy, they're getting a bit arrogant, they're getting a bit, well, I don't really need God because I've got lots of money. He labours that. Now, it seems a petty point. It's not a petty point, because when people get arrogant, they start ruling the church. And when people give tithes, the people with the biggest money control the minister in these independent churches. That's why I'm a Presbyterian / Congregationalist. And I don't like independent churches, one man, one vote. I don't like it, because ministers then are at the mercy or the terror of the big donors in the church. So the church must be more hierarchical. Now, I'm not saying we go back to Catholicism. No way. But there must be a firm hierarchy in a church where not everybody can vote on who's the minister. Like the Presbyterian church, it's only the elders. Now, the congregation may be able to vote on who the elders are, but there's maybe 12 men who vote who the minister is in such matters. There should be no women involved in the church, period. No reading, no doing the stuff that women do, fine, but not involved in the day-to-day business management of the church. That is where the church has went. Because we know, and no harm to you ladies listening to this, but you have been born with a fault. It was Adam who was deceived. It was Eve deceived, not Adam. She then deceived Adam. Women, they lack in discernment. That's a fact. I don't care if people are spitting at the radio right now, but that's a fact. So women should not in any way, shape or form be involved in the church. Because the church then takes on a feminine nature, which means they love everybody. Stop the death penalty. understand everybody. No, there's some people who should be hung by the neck until they're dead. And there should be some people who should be rejected in life. Women have a problem with that. So that's the first thing.
James.
The other thing is...
James, let me say this. James, the problem we have with the churches over here is the leadership, pure and simple. The people in denominational headquarters, I tell people they've exchanged the Gospels of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John for the Gospels of Peter, Paul, and Mary, if you remember the folk singing trio from the Civil Rights Movement.
Yeah, I do. Yep.
And see, this is what our problem is over here, and we have pastors that will not be leaders. You know, they seem to covet a flock that God hasn't given them. They want a flock of black sheep when God's given them a flock of white sheep.
Yeah.
Literally and figuratively.
We need some persecution because, look, there used to be the strongest of the men in the Killing Times who became ministers in the Scottish Covenanters. Look that up. It was the strongest and bravest of our men who became ministers. Now is the weakest of our men who are looking for an easy job and getting away from the real pressures of society. But again, I go back to it. If you look at every denominational office and hierarchy, it's full of women. It's full of women, top to bottom. And this is where it's all going wrong. The church should be a masculine, powerful thing. It should be powerful.
Well, see, what we have here in Memphis, let me just say this, James. We have Nathan Bedford Forrest as our role model as a Celtic warrior.
Yes.
He was exactly that.
Indeed.
He was, and see, we used to have people like that in the pulpit too, but instead now, if you're too dumb to be a doctor or a lawyer, well, then you can go to divinity school because nobody's too dumb to go there.
But this is the thing, too, that we talk about so much. We you bet them.
Let's not forget, we're talking with them.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, but let me just round up on this whole, because there's war coming. And I just want to be very clear on the point I made, because no doubt the Southern Poverty Law make much of it. I don't propose we attack anybody. I don't propose we kill anybody. I don't propose we do any preemptive action. I propose we defend what we have. And we have a saying in Ulster, what we have, we hold. And that's what I'm saying. And how we do this is not through hatred. I'm absolutely flabbergasted with the amount of hate in Britain amongst the right wing, the amount of hate in America amongst the right wing. Look, hate can take you so far, but it won't do the job. If you need to hate the enemy less in front of you than you love the people behind you who you're defending, then you shall win. It's the love of the people behind you who you're defending that drives you forward to certain death over the trenches in World War One and Two. That's what we need. It's not soft. It's not unmanly. It's not feminine to love. Men must love, but a manly love, which means we will lay down our life as the Lord has instructed us. We must have an overriding love. We must be crying when we see the injustices against our fellow people, our European people, our Christian people. We must be driven. We must become love fanatics, that we will absolutely destroy anyone who comes against our people, not because we hate them, but because we love our own. That's the secret, brother.
Well, there is a Southern, I think that in America, one thing that I grew up with was the idea of a sense of solidarity between all white people, because we had so many non-white people in our midst. For example, I don't care if you're from Norway or Sicily, you're a white person and you're my brother. That's the way we think in the South.
Well, and two, it was this masculine, this manly Christianity that... Europe was founded upon. I mean, Europe's alternate name was Christendom for so long, and now it's a shame that so much of Christianity has become associated with weak-minded men who have succumbed
and liberal
to the world.
Twits.
But I'll tell you, there is a better way forward, and we will have to re-embrace, as Constantine knew, going all the way back to then, we will have to re-embrace the banner of Christ if we are to save our nations. Brother Jim Dowson has been... setting the example his entire life. We only began to scratch at the surface of his biography, of the institutions that he has helped lead, the work that he has done throughout his life that has led him to be named the most influential figure of the right in Britain and elsewhere. He's a fascinating guy. We look forward to
breaking bread with you someday.
Well, that and, of course, bringing him back on. But he has contributed to this book. That we have invested in. I have a pallet of these books in the studio here that we're going to be sending out to donors for our Christmas.
Not pallets of ballots, but pallets of books.
fundraising drive. Deus Vult, the handbook for resisting the great replacement. You think of what your favorite you think of what your favorite issue is, your pet issue, your signature issue. It is covered in this book. This book covers everything, and I want to thank Brother Jim for being a contributor to it. It is a fantastic book, not just in terms of content, but in quality, all the way down to the very way it was put together. And he has inscribed his signature to each, along with the verse from the book of Joel, "Time is short." Brother Jim, thank you for being with us tonight. We have got to get you back on very, very soon. Thank you for staying up late with us.
Yeah, just let me tell you, that scripture is not from Joel. The one from Joel is about people coming up. The enemy's at the gates. Let's go up and meet them and have war. That's the quote from Joel in there.
Time is short, and then you've got the scripture.